Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, thanks for tuning into the show. But before we get started, I wanted to give you all the opportunity to hop in our group at facebook.com/group/nonprofitarchitect. We're running a contest right now for your chance to win a $200 donation. We're not just building stronger nonprofits by giving you the actionable steps to do what you do better, but we're also putting our money where our mouth is. And if you sign up for the contest and the rules are in the group, that you will get the chance to win a $200 donation and have a direct, real-world, real-time impact to your mission. If you're struggling with fundraising, if you're unsure of how to handle a board, if you're not sure where to go and what your next steps are because you have this endless list of things to do, you can also sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group. Real easy, real low barrier of entry at $50 a month to get in with other leaders like yourself that find themselves stuck. Help let other people in the group solve your problems. If you're doing this thing as a solo shop or without a lot of support from your board, it's hard to know who to go talk to. It's hard to know what to do next. And if you're doing this alone, chances are you're not going to get very far. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go as a group. So also in the group, sign up for the Nonprofit Architect Alliance Mastermind Group and let the experts help build your stronger nonprofit each and every month. Now let's go to the interview. Hey, thanks for listening today. I've got Mark Buzan on the hot seat. Mark, how are you doing today?
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I always like to get people warmed up before we hop on and record. And I think if I didn't stop you, we would just go ahead and, you know, tell war stories for the whole time. We had a lot of without actually recording any of it. So I was like, we got to stop. We got to get this, some of this stuff on tape so we can, you know, give it to the audience. But you fired up the Society of Nonprofit Board Directors. Like, how did you get from your experience to where you decided that this is what you need to do and what value is this bringing to the nonprofit world?
Thanks for asking that, Travis. You know, there was a partial element there. I'm a firm believer, as many are, I'm sure you are as well, that there's elements of entrepreneurship that need to be applied in the not-for-profit world in a balanced perspective. But when I was starting up my association management company, our executive director, I was first and foremost trying to look to see where there was some opportunities where I could network and meet with other people who served on boards of not-for-profits and associations, charities, foundations. It's just whom I tend to serve. But I was also looking very earnestly from my own experience of having been, as I like to say, that fired into success as a former executive director. I'd been executive director, president, CEO of a national association a number of years ago. I'd gotten on the wrong end of a disagreement with my board and didn't come out on the winning end on that. And when I was looking to, you know, and I got over that, and I just the way I am, I really wanted to know, okay, what part of this story did I own, and what could I improve going for future in my career to be more like this? So I set out on a path of trying to figure out whom could I network with, who could I go out and talk to in an efficient way of people who serve on boards and not-for-profits and associations. And I was shocked, absolutely shocked, that there was very little out there. I mean, I'm coming from an association world. I firmly believe that there's really no better way to learn than from your colleagues, your peers, et cetera. But I was seeing that there are associations and trade groups, guilds and all like that for people who are executive directors. You have in the United States, ASAE, Association Society, the American Society of Association Executives. You've got AFP, which is the Association of Fundraising Professionals. You've got even corporate world, you know, there's corporate director societies as well on all continents around this world. But nothing out there for people who are specifically just geared towards wanting to serve on a board of a not-for-profit and association. I was just flabbergasted by this. There's associations for everything out there. And I thought from a further down the path, the conclusion I kind of came to is no wonder, in a way, charitables, nonprofits, et cetera, keep on repeating the same darn problem over and over and over again, because they tend to work, boards and organizations work in their own respective silos. When if they only had the ability, let's say, to actually board members, for example, who are the most geared and like that, had the opportunity to be able to network, to be able to chat with and say, you know, Travis had tried that kind of thing over there and it worked on his board and it worked really, really well. Jill tried the other thing. I don't know if we want to try that. She learned from that experience. We've kind of worked from a flawed thinking, I think, in the not-for-profit world, that if I'm in healthcare or if I'm in child services or if I'm on a chamber of commerce of some sort of the board there, I could never possibly ever have anything in common with any of these kinds of things. Nothing could be further than the truth. And in my years of experience, I've seen this happening over and over and over again, where it's maybe a variation of, usually it's a variation of the same darn problem being repeated over and over again, if they only had the sense to be able to come together. And I mean, in my own experience, you only have to look through human history. There's been hundreds of years of why we'd have guild societies like this, is because you learn from your peers and your professions. And with the importance that nonprofits have in our society, no wonder we haven't made, with the numbers, the millions, I mean, it was like 2.5 million not-for-profit organizations registered in the United States. I think it's probably growing. In my country, it's around 25,000. You would think that by now we would have solved some of the world's ails. No wonder we haven't, because we keep on doing the rinse and recycle of the same odd people who are ill-equipped and not able to do this in terms of leadership.
I tell you, I love what you're doing. And as soon as you started talking, I was like, oh, Jay Abraham. Jay Abraham, if you don't know, is really big in the business world, but he didn't really get as big as he could have gotten right away because he was focusing on his industry, his one specific industry that he was in. It wasn't until he started consulting across varied industries, across the spectrum, a multidisciplinary approach, did he get to be the guru that he is. And yeah, that's one of the reasons I love interviewing so many different people from so many different types of organizations and nonprofits in the business world, is because you get that multidisciplinary approach. You know, what is working in Canada, in your case, might not have been tried in the US, but we don't know. And we don't know what that experience looks like if we've never been exposed to it, if we haven't heard it, if we haven't considered something else new. I mean, I've served on a couple of different boards, a startup board and a board that was pretty well established. And the differences in just the two boards, even in Oklahoma City, both in different industries, was astounding. And you're like, well, why serve on a board? Why even put yourself through the pressure? We were talking about this earlier. What is even the benefit of someone serving on a board? What did you find?
That's an amazing question, because this is where that entrepreneurial side of this is. You know, the entrepreneurs were always trying to find out what's a pain point, and then you present a solution. Board directors, and this is my observation, and of course there's always going to be exceptions, so don't write me about this, but I think that across the board like this, this is what I've observed. The best ones tend to be rather humble individuals that want to go and make a difference. And they want to feel like they plot on, but they're not going to the type that's going to go about and grandstand. They're actually the type five person level personality. It's identified in Jim Collins' book, Good to Great, where he talk about that type of person. But the challenge with that type of individual is that A, more often than not, they're not necessarily always aware of why they do it per se. They kind of it's just ingrained in there. Or they're too humble, or maybe not wanting to maybe speak up about that, that personal gain. You have to almost corner them in a safe environment, which I do. That's maybe, don't call me a stalker, but maybe I like this. I really want to know about this and say, no, seriously, Travis, why do you do this? Why do you take time away from your family, your career, your business, to sit around a boring board table and eat stale donuts and drink coffee on a Saturday, for example, to talk about financials?
I have a real passion for taking board meeting minutes. I want to do as many things as possible.
For you.
And I want to write the minutes for these people. That's why I want to be on that's not true at all.
That does not happen. So why, you know, that led me down with, you know, some maybe that's inspired me to do some formal research on this sometime there, but asking board directors over years of asking them, of interviewing them, of surveying them, two groups of fundamental questions. The first being, why do you do this? Okay. What would make you to do this? And it comes down to many of them. They say, I feel like I want to be part of something bigger. Mm-hmm. I want to feel like I'm part of something. I've done my little part and I can put my stamp on this and I can feel really good about that self. Or as some other board member said to me a number of years ago, he says, Mark, I do this because I want to feel like I'm surrounded by people smarter than me. That particularly knocked me on my derriere, frankly, to be able to say, wow, that is one of the most profound, that still to this day sticks, one of the most profound comments I've ever heard. And it makes so much sense. Isn't that much more enriching to be around a room of people, a really smart, really engaged people where you come out at this and you're literally, your mind is blown, like, wow, man, that was amazing. That was like, I've got new realizations I hadn't like that. That's a kind of an experience that I would look forward to being part of a really interesting and smart discussion. That's the first reason why they do this. Then the second part of the question that I asked them there later on is saying, what frustrates you and what would it take for you to get to leave? And that is something that it's a bit of a taboo, I think, in the not-for-profit world that we just don't seem to really put a lot of effort in. We put a lot of effort, in my opinion, in the paid world, in the corporate world, for what keeping good employees, really good employees, but no attention for keeping good volunteers and good board leaders, particularly leaders. And the answer was the two things. I get frustrated when I don't see progress on the mission, and I get frustrated too, and eventually will leave when I just feel that my time and talents are not being respected.
Oh, that is, that has direct impact on me considering my next few years. I've got more than 20 years in the Navy. I'm trying to decide when I'm going to, move on with the next phase of my life. And one of the things that pops up in my head is, if I consider myself to be unhappy with my current situation, it doesn't come down to the paycheck. It really comes down to utilization. If I've got the talents and the passion for these things and they put me up on the shelf or they keep me on the sideline, why would I dedicate any more of my time to not being utilized and not being called upon and not being engaged with what we do? It's a big conversation that you have, with board meetings, people in the nonprofit worlds. Are they board meetings or are they B-O-R-E-D? Are they boring? Are they
board meetings? Are boring meetings. Yeah.
So how do you even get a board engaged and get them that impactful feeling and let them feel like they're being utilized? Do you just take someone and you say, all right, you're going to be the treasurer? Or do you figure out what talents they have and where to plug them in? How does that work?
It starts first and foremost this is an excellent question. I think it starts really at the beginning to making sure that you've got the right, as Jim Collins says, you got the right people on the bus first and foremost. Get the right people on the bus. And then you worry about the next thing is putting the right people on the seats and the right seats on the bus. He talks about that. I think that was just fantastic the way he wrote that. But that's the first thing. But not only that, I think that this is so important. Executive directors, board chairs, boards themselves, we have to challenge this preconception that it's your obligation or as Dan Pilota puts it, that there is only one possible accepted reasoning for why somebody should volunteer, and that is benevolence. That is the only acceptable reason why somebody should do this. Now, hear me out on this. When people say, oh my God, what are you saying? People want to get like self-gain out of this? Well, hold on a second. Why would somebody take time away from their friends, their family, their career, et cetera, like this, to contribute? Compensation doesn't always have to be financial. I'm not talking about ever. There are folks out there who say that, boards should be, compensated. I can't go that far. I'm not on board with them there. But I do think it's reasonable that this should be a fair exchange. This has to be a fair, it's a two-way street. you have to check in with your people, just as you would do in a company like that. You know, check in and say, hey, how's it going for you? Are you happy, or is this working out, or you having some problems? How can we, you know, adapt or change and make this a more inclusive environment for you? The whole kit and caboodle. We hear about this forever, but in the not-for-profit world, well, that's a poo-poo thing to this coffee. We can't possibly talk about that. No, you know, compensation can also be, you know what? A little bit of recognition. Compensation can also mean, are you finding this engaging? Mm-hmm. Our compensation is, are you developing professionally and personally as a result of this? One, speaking of that board director I talked about earlier, he said he wanted to be surrounded by people smarter than themselves. Do you feel that you're learning and growing as a result of this?
Mm.
I don't think, I'm not wrong about this, but put in that perspective, I don't think that's a controversial, that shouldn't be a controversial political conversation. It's just checking in with somebody to say, how's this going for you? But in the not-for-profit world, we've got this Puritan mentality around it, that there's only one sort of way, much like Dan Pilota's books talk about the reason that charitable donations, this was kind of set up in the Puritan age because it was the individual, the self, was viewed as selfish, as incorrupt, and all like this, and that the way that you compensated was to give money out, not because you genuinely wanted to help, because you wanted to feel like you're doing better. That there was
you're paying your penance, right?
You're paying your penance.
The guilt of being selfish and taking care of your family first. And it's heartbreaking to talk about that and what that looks like. And I talk to so many startup nonprofits, especially veteran startup nonprofits, that refuse to talk about compensation for staff members. They're focused on this volunteer only mentality. And I was like, why on earth are you working so hard to try to ensure that you continue the pain that you're on? And it's a penance. I call it martyr syndrome. I've talked about it in a few episodes, but it's
nonprofit martyrs.
Yeah. They're paying their penance. They're getting their 40 lashes in that they're giving themselves before they go out and spread cheer around the world. Because unless they're going through personal pain while they're doing this, it's not making a real impact. And I just think that's a garbage statement. But why do you think there's such a distance between the organization as a whole with the CEO or the executive director and the board as an entity, as like this thing that's on a pedestal? What's the gap from? Why does it exist?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And that led me down to my understanding of this. And this is so important, because from the executive director's point of view, I think a lot, and I was guilty of this. I was guilty of this. Folks, if you're doubting me like this, I got canned because I was not in tune with this. I went down my own path and I thought that, gosh darn it, why can't they see the value of what I'm doing? They got it all wrong. I hear about this. You only have to read the sum of the nonprofit subreddits or the discussions about executive directors. I find this particularly in the States, where it's like it's a bitch fest. It's a bitch. They're bitching about, I don't get paid enough. They don't respect me. They overwork me, and all these kinds of things. And maybe that's true. I'm not denigrating that. But then it ends up being like an adversarial relationship with the board.
It's not helpful. And it should
not be. That's not helpful. You got a piss poor attitude. Hold on a second. What's that old? There's somebody told me something. I keep on this. Be careful when you point a finger at somebody, because there's three fingers pointing back at you.
Yeah.
You know, there's another side of the coin to this. Nonprofit staff, you're living it every single day. So I get that. I celebrate it like this. The role of the board is there to be, to watch out for you, to give you guidance, to say, hey, because you're in the weeds, you have to be in the weeds. It's really hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. The board's role is to be that frame for you to say, have you thought about this? Considering, are you watching out for what the community is? Are we actually making progress on the mission?
I thought they were supposed to tell me how much I can spend on paperclips. I thought that was the role of the board.
Well, that's, don't get me started on that. That's a whole, that's a whole other issue right there. That's, you know, and we'll talk about that at some other time. But I mean, that's the role of it there. Now, take off your executive. This took me a long time, frankly, there. So I'm not unsympathetic to executive directors listening to this, because I've been where you are there twice, you know, I'm down on the staff side and now contracted out to do executive director roles. Board directors do this because they desire, they want to feel they want to get back. Maybe they've achieved a certain degree of some success in their career, their life, well, like this, and they feel like they want to be able to impart upon this. Yes, let's address the big white elephant in the room. Some of them want to do it because they feel like they get a little bit, they want to get a little bit of recognition. It feels makes them feel good. God forbid, we should try to celebrate those, our prima donnas. What's that old thing? I think General Patton once said is, you got a prima donna, celebrate them. Celebrate them. They will do amazing things. Put them up on a pedestal. They do all of this as well from the corner of their desk. They're not in this, nor should they be, full-time like you are. Trust me, you don't want them in there full-time like this. So you don't want them out there. You trust me, you don't want them. Trust me when I'm saying you don't want that. That's a good place, frankly, for them where they occupy. So think of it from your perspective now. You at best get to see a very top level, high level view of where the organization is going, and maybe a monthly, sometimes bi-monthly. I've seen some boards meet quarterly. How can you honestly expect, are you putting them, I'm putting this out to executive directors now. Can you honestly and fairly expect, are you being fair with them? To expect them to understand the whole undergoings of your organization or your job or what you're doing. Of course, you can't do that. They have a role to look out for the whole of the organization. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole aspect of where boards can go. I mean, a number of them are going to send complaints. Well, yeah, but my board, they get in the weeds. That's a whole other topic there. I'm going to get into that there. I'm not talking about boards gone badly. Okay. I'm talking about the dynamic of that there. Executive directors, I'm going to put that challenge out to you. If I got time for an anecdote, I'll tell you why this kind of goes wrong on that there. Okay. One classic example. We talked about about counting paperweights or doing minutes or something like this. I spoke with an executive director who she had some 25 years or something like that experience in 20 odd years experience as a CEO. A very bright lady, very, very bright lady. Who had run this organization with a very small staff and more of a working board kind of model. And I told her about the things that made, you know, what would cause them to be frustrated. And she got really kind of defensive. She says, well, we have somebody who has a social media and marketing agency on our board, and we put him on charge of, you know, our social media accounts, and then he did nothing. We thought he was passionate about this. Okay, yeah. Let me ask you something. What did you ask him? What was he responsible to do? He was supposed to put the tweets out. Okay. This guy runs a marketing agency with how many staff? And you asked him to do the tweets. How enriching do you think that is what this guy does? You just ask him to do what his intern does. Oh, yeah. Oh, it wasn't in for it. It was just, he likes you, but he was just wasn't that into you for when it came to that. Had you not thought of maybe leveraging his experience and maybe getting him to do a live stream as a board member about his experience, we could pump it up and talk about the organization. You think that he might have been a little bit more keen toward doing that? We would have adjusted maybe a little bit more towards his interest level and what he is. That's the problem I think that we come across. We're just sort of say, you know, it's a slap and roll out there where boards are viewed by too many as kind of a, well, it's something that we have to tolerate and put up rather than something that's leveraged. And that's actually another area of frustration for many board directors. I'm talking this is saying, you know, they ask me, but the staff doesn't really, they don't really want my opinion anyways. Not really.
I mean, you bring up some interesting points. I mean, like, did it never cross her mind? Yeah, I don't know this person, right? Yeah. I don't know the situation, but the first thing that pops into my head, if I've got a marketing guru who runs an agency on my team, is, hey, what would be the best or the coolest way to leverage our social media for what we're trying to do and get them engaged in something that they're passionate about? You take the passion of the organization, you take their zone of genius, what they do with their full-time career, and you see where that can cross over, and you let that person create something new.
Exactly.
Are we so stuck on what a board should be that we can't ask a question and reframe it?
Or rather, worse sometimes, and working boards, is it's merely about plugging holes. And that is a waste. And we wonder, Travis, why we haven't made more progress in society. I mean, the goal of most charities should be to try to put themselves out of business.
Well, exactly. Well, so
we cured polio when it was like 60, 70 years ago.
Yeah.
Dimes. I mean, I remember it being sort of active, but it's nowhere near what it used to be. And they were fine with that. There, you know,
I just got done reading through Dan Heath's Upstream and what that looks like to take care of problems before they start. Are there people that are going to be homeless that are going to need services? Yes. But if we never go upstream to figure out how they got there, we're never going to be able to solve the problem for most people. And when you get through the dissections of this book, I don't know if you've read it or not, there's actually organizations out there that have solved homelessness in the U.S. in like a dozen major cities. And it walks through how to do that. And the multidisciplinary approach where you're working with a coalition in different areas of nonprofit work, of government, of all these different things working together, like, oh, that's going to lower our fundraising. How great is that to need less funds to take care of the things you need? Because
there are societal problems to take on. Trust me.
Absolutely. And they work you through how to get to functional zero. And I love the concept. I posted a review on the book. I've gotten out to a couple of people that I know that are working in homelessness sector or veteran homelessness or whatever. And I asked them, I was like, have you ever considered working with a coalition or a group or someone else interested in working on the same problem you are? And I got a resounding majority that said they hadn't even considered it. And I was like, did you know that there's cities out there right now that are at functional zero? There's more housing available than long-term homeless people in their city. And they're like, that's not possible. And they haven't even opened up the thought that says the thing that I'm trying to solve, the people that I'm trying to help, you get to that that hero syndrome, right? Because they're in the trenches, they're solving the problem and not working on preventing the problem in the first place. And not only did they not even consider it, they haven't read it, they're not even interested until they hear some kind of outside story that it's even possible.
And you see much of that. Or where I'd be willing to bet, I don't know these organizations you're speaking of there, but I'd be willing to bet that the dialogue around those board tables is far different than in the ones that you said that they hadn't considered it.
Absolutely.
They very likely, I'm going to go on a limb here, very likely put a lot of effort in getting the right people on the bus, putting the right people in the right seats on the bus. But I'll go one step further than Jim Collins there. As it from his book there, but regularly checking in to say, how's it working out for you? Have we got a right kind of a culture that's working out for you in this? Are you getting something in? And then as well, I would also be willing to bet, because this that kind of a culture creates one's itself where it's self-enriching, is that people start asking about where are we moving on the mission? Are we actually making a problem? What are some of the big grand strategy challenges about why this is, why, you know, who do we need to include in this conversation? Those are kind of I don't know about you, Travis, but that kind of a conversation fires me up. That would be, wow, I would look forward to go that. I would drive to the other side of the town or get on a plane and go to a meeting like that, because I would find that really mentally stimulating. That's a reason why. In my mind, why board members do this. They won't tell you that because they're a humble bunch. They're most of them there. That's a bit of the frustrating thing, is they won't tell you that up front, because we've got a cultural kind of a thing where, oh, you're just doing this for self-interest. Well, yeah. So?
We do just about everything out of self-interest at some level. So.
Yeah. but that's a bit of the dysfunction. And that's sort of what led me and what drives me with the society of nonprofit board directors, is breaking down the silos, creating opportunities for board directors, the most motivated ones. That we're not for everybody. If you're content with the status quo, this is probably not your thing. For them to be able to do some cross-pollination and say, you know what, we tried this in this organization, this worked really well. or to break it down and democratize the information about how to be a better board director, how to do continuously improve, how to do agile governance, all these kinds of things, so that you're constantly moving forward and that this is an enriching part of your life. I mean, we only do how many spins around this around the sun that we do in our lifetime. Make the most of it. Why would you settle for something like this? Anyway, that's just my view on things and what we try to strive for.
See, I know we were talking beforehand, and we're talking about people that are just kind of there, just kind of being on the bus, just going along with everything. Yeah. I'm kind of a pain in the butt. I am a questioner. I want to know why we're doing it, why this is the best way we're doing it. We've always done it this way. Well, has that way you've always done it always been successful? Yeah. What would it take to try something new? Why are you willing or unwilling to try something? And sometimes I've learned over the years that that's not the best attitude to have. It's just being a pain. But as I've gotten more mature in my approach to these things, it becomes we really didn't consider that before. I was like, well, would you be interested in having a few minute discussion on this, or can I put together, you know, some reading material on this before we talk about moving forward? Because these same ideas are not going to get you to new places.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And, you know, I keep on referring to Jim Collins because I love that. I love this book, Great, Good, Great. But he said it in the social sector. He's got a social sector version of that book. He said, to be effective in the nonprofit world, and you probably are witnessing, you've kind of described a little bit of your own evolution on this, you can't approach it like you're a king, rather much more like you're a senator. And you've got to be a very astute politician to know how to push, know when to lay off the brakes a little bit, know who to get the right people on board there to build something like this, because decision-making processes in the nonprofit world is extremely decentralized. You've got to get, I had a staff member before, you know, he joined my association management firm, and he was just really detail oriented, really good like this, but he would get incredibly frustrated by how long it took things. And I had to remind him, he says, yes, it's decentralized. It seems a little bit messy, but in the end, you actually end up with better decisions. So I think that that's something to be said of it, because everybody's bought into this. But the challenge there, this is that not everybody perhaps is as tough as you, Travis. Some will, unfortunately, the really good ones will just say, you know what? Screw it. I'm gone.
Yeah, they'll just leave. They will just leave. And you hear this all the time. The turnover rate for executive directors or CEOs, for fundraising professionals, and sometimes quality board members, the numbers are astounding. You're looking between 8 months and 20 months, so less than 2 years, we're just cycling through these people. I was an aircraft mechanic for a number of years before getting commissioned in the Navy. And if you keep using the same tool over and over and over again, and sometimes you start using it like a screwdriver, then, you know, it becomes a hammer, and, you know, using it things for something that wasn't designed for, well, you end up wearing that tool out. And it's the same thing that we find in the nonprofit world, where you get an executive director and you expect them to do everything, or you get that fundraiser and you run them through the ringer. Their zone of genius is networking and putting together big collaborations, but you're bogging him down with administrative paperwork that can be done by any intern, any VA, any first-time guy, but you're burning them out on the minutia. Or you've got a great couple of volunteers that love what you're doing. They love being part of the organization. That is their zone of genius, and they love you for it. But then you never give them any recognition.
Or the agency, the marketing agency guy who you gave him the tweets to put the tweets out. I mean,
that would be like someone asking me, as you know, a nonprofit podcast host and a consultant, former board member, volunteer, like, hey, we'd really like you to show up to the event, and could you, you know, set up tables? Not only does that not utilize my skill set, it's almost insulting.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm there and people are putting on tables, I'm going to go pitch in. But if that you brought me there just to set up tables, like, dude, why you completely missed the bus on
That goes to what I was saying about the number two reason about why, one or two reasons about why they would leave.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it is most of them won't say, they'll just say, oh, my family or time equipments have changed and I've got to move on like this. And Unfortunately, in the nonprofit world, we kind of just take that and say, oh, okay, well, sorry to see you go. I challenge you, dig a little deeper. Dig a little deeper into that, folk. You're going to get some interesting information.
I had a question come up in one of my Facebook groups this week. This question came up because I was frustrated with some of the responses I was getting from founders and executive directors. Like, oh, yeah, this is great and all, but I've got to go ask my board. Like, the question then becomes, the question I pose in these groups is, are you the chief executive officer or are you the chief, I got to go ask the board everything officer? And what does that look like? And I'm not talking about, you know, them signing off on a $20,000 package. I'm having them, you know, sign up to do something that costs the organization $0 that can be done in a very short time frame that has the potential to make them, you know, a couple $1,000s a month in recurring donations. It is so frustrating to say, well, I got to go ask my board. Great. When does your board meet next? 8 months from now? What are the chances that you're going to sell it to them like I sold it to you? What are the chances they're going to be on board with this? Are they just going to say no because they don't want to be bothered with doing the new thing? And what?
Well, I'd say that, Travis, there's probably that's an onion with multiple peeling though, like this behind that, what the reason is this. And that's just my nature as to why I believe they're really digging into this. Here's my observation on that. The first thing, it goes to what I was saying earlier, that this whole structure, nonprofits themselves, it's a very decentralized power base and decision-making process in itself. But there is a culture that we create, one, where executive directors are either, I'm going to say that they're either chicken or they've had the fear, maybe in some point in their career, and I was witness of this, you had the fear of God put into you by a board because God forbid, you know, you might do something and you're going to get, you know, called out like this. I remember some board meetings of the thing is like walking the gauntlet. I like that. Trying to walk the gauntlet. And then at the end of it, my staff and I was like, oh God, we survived that one. Whew. You know, because on the board end of side of things, we just do a horrible job of recruiting. We do a horrible job of training. We do an even worse job and an abysmal job of making sure that we've got a congenial professional culture that's being flourished on this. Now, people are going to have a lot of stuff that's going to be, you know, nodding on this because I'm not saying anything that people haven't already said a lot out there. But the thing that's really important in all of this to keep in mind is that in my observation of things, what we do for recruitment of board members is flawed because we have a tendency of taking the first warm body rather than, no, wait, I remember very clearly being CEO of one there. We had a board member, for God's sakes. The guy knew 3 months prior we're going to have a strategic planning retreat. And then after that, like we more often than that, we had a big cocktail, a cocktail reception and networking. It's a big industry thing. It was the thing to, you did not miss that in the industry. It was the big thing. People flew in for that there. The dude showed up and missed the strategic planning thing, but then had the gall to show up for the cocktail. There.
Oh, the thing that benefited him most, he was there for, but not benefited the organization.
And he flaunted, literally, he had like, what are you going to do about it? Kind of thing. And I remember at drinks with the board chair saying he was just, you know, frustrated and angry. And I said, you know, you're right. I agree. This is unacceptable. This is totally unacceptable. What are you going to do about it? Like you need to do something. Oh, but we can't get rid of them because if we do that, well, then who's going to be occupying that seat will be empty. And I said, and?
It's empty if he doesn't do any work anyway.
I literally said, and? And he said, I guess I never really thought of it that way. Yeah. But then came the question of the courage there because he didn't have a culture in there that was where expectations were put up. I firmly believe in a lot of this, and I have this conversation with other nonprofit chairs I counsel and I says, if you expect little, you will get little.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lowering the bar only gets it to a place where people can trip over it.
And then they don't respect you. And then the most motivated people don't respect you.
Well, the people that are the right people that are on the bus. Let's go back to Jim Collins here. You get the right people on the bus. They're in the right seats on the bus. But then you allow someone on the bus that doesn't pull their weight, that gossips, that's not on time, that wastes your time. And then that person is then not appropriately disciplined in whatever that looks like. The good people that you have on the bus, the right people that are doing the amazing things, they're going to lose confidence in their leadership and they're going to leave.
Yeah.
Because if they're holding themselves accountable and they're holding their accountable and everyone's moving on the same page and working together, but this other guy is kind of being a pain for whatever reason, is not held accountable, then why would they waste their time in a great organization if the organization doesn't have these standards and it's not raising the bar and holding people to high standards?
And that's true. But the second, that's the first part of it. But the second problem, and this is my assessment of things, is that reviewing a lot of the dialogue that's out there about this conversation, you're going to get a lot of people howling the net. You know, this isn't revolutionary. A lot of people are shaking their head and I agree. But that which is put out there for board directors, in my opinion, tends to be coming very much from the perspective of former executive directors, staffers, or consultants who used to be executive directors. And nothing wrong with that. I am one of those guys there.
Hey, but, me too.
Yeah, exactly. Their perspective on things is very different. And it comes from almost a punitive kind of Charlie Brown, wonk, 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 like teacher there, right there, saying, you know, thou shalt do this and thou shalt do this. That's hardly, nobody joins a board or volunteers their time for to follow rules. They do it for the inspirational thing. And you get them first on the inspiration, and then you create the culture, and they self-govern themselves at this. And the training that you provide has to be presented as well in an inclusive fashion from the perspective of the receiving end of things. If you give somebody, like a lot of the stuff that's out there about governance training, in my view of things, is very much, you need bloody well a PhD in governance and corporate governance and law to be able to understand or make out what that means. When, again, this is not their full-time job. I want to repeat that again. Repeat this always to yourselves, executive directors. This is not their full-time job. Understand that. It's not. It's not reasonable to expect it. You've got to be able to break it down in bite-sized pieces that make sense, that is practical, that is easily adaptable for somebody to be able to quickly get. And that is where I think is the biggest part of the problem that we're trying to address, at least with the society, not board directors, is break it down into a fashion that's not overwhelming, that's agile and it's adapting, but it's also from the needs and the perspectives of board directors, which is different than staff.
Yeah, you said something in our pre-interview that really kind of brings this home. The board is there to prevent nefarious, you know, law-breaking activities. Yeah. A, and B is what you're doing, making that impact, moving that needle forward, doing what the community needs to do. And I think if you can answer those two things and understand what the mission is, then you're at least doing your base level job as a board member.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what kind of impact a board is going to have if they're not trained. You know, me as a consultant, and you probably the same thing. You get frustrated when you talk to someone, and again, I'm in the military, and I was end up going back to that stuff. Is, you know, you're in the military, you spend serious time, serious money on training and planning. That is what you do. Unless you are boots on the ground, airplane in the what, you are training. And then you get into the nonprofit world, or heaven forbid, veterans that start nonprofits, and they have never considered training. Putting aside a budget for training, like, are you training your CEO of your organization, your nonprofit, like the money that would be spent on a CEO of a for-profit organization? Yeah. Or how about for the department heads, for your program managers? Are they getting training? Is your board getting training? No. Do you have a chunk of money in your budget to enrich the lives of the people in your organization for either own personal professional development and to do a better job for your organization and for your mission to ultimately impact the community that you serve?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But also developing the training in formats that are easy to digest. because I've also had my chats with a number of board directors and like this and say, I think if you come at them heavy and hard with you got to know this, or particularly, or you got to know not to do that. That's hardly inspirational. A job predicated on what you're not supposed to do is hardly inspirational. And yeah. I think we lose people on the front end, good qualified people who would go into and do amazing things in the corporate world in leadership roles and do amazing things and be a great people to work with. We lose out on them as leaders because of what much has been said. It's been the training out there is too voluminous. It's too complicated. And I think in many ways we have to simplify it and bring the board role down to its bare bones at the nonprofits for what it's really supposed to be. Like you said, it's to watch out, which is really, frankly, only a small part of things. Because most board, I do believe most nonprofits are well run, and in many respects, they're probably better run than for-profit entities. But utilizing the best of our society's leaders to solving our society's ails. And you do that by constantly checking in and saying, how are we making progress? What are some of those roadblocks? And how do we put our collective? That's the whole point of having a board, a group of people. We're going to put our collective heads together and say, how do we tackle this darn problem? Mm-hmm. How are we making movement on this? Not to literally rehash or have the executive director rehash a report of everything that they did the last week. Don't care. Send it to me in an email if you must. I'll look at it, and if I have a question, I'll take it up with you there. But don't utilize my time. I mean, on board meetings, sometimes where it's like two bloody hours of reports, and we didn't. And maybe at best, 10. I was on one more meeting recently where a 2-hour meeting, 10 minutes of which we were talking about discussions about things that some strategy.
So yeah, send me the reports and I'll read ahead. And if I have questions, I'll follow up an email before the board meeting. Like, hey, this is a little confusing. Can you explain it to me either in an email or, sometime after the board meeting? That's not what board meetings are for. Like, but, when I look at organizations, I think that they don't really give their board a direction. They're just there, especially if they're young. And I know there's some people like, Chuck Loring out there that say that you've got to have your board members be three things: ambassadors, advocates, and askers. And if you haven't asked potential board members if they're willing to do these things, then chances are you don't have the right person on the bus. I've got a coaching client over the last year. We've been working her bylaws and some different things. And, she made one of the mistakes that a lot of startups make. And they had, really absentee board members, just people sign a piece of paper so they can incorporate, and that's not encourage at any level. But I was like, well, it's time to recruit board members that are going to make an impact. And, one of the things I always have them do is like, do you have 5 hours or 10 hours a week or sometime a week to dedicate to this job? Because people, I think, will weed themselves out whether they have the exact time or not. But, put it out there, see what you got. We came up with a board questionnaire and stuff, and she was maybe thinking she was going to get 2 or 3 people interested. And I was like, no, you're going to get 10 or more interested. She had 15 highly qualified individuals that were knocking on her door when she put that out there to try to be on her board.
People want to be part of something there.
Yes, but don't have the passion to start a nonprofit and something that you want to serve. And it burns in you so much that you have to start an organization to do this, to then think that no one else has the same passion. It might not be as intense as you, right? But there's people out there willing to serve darn near anything that you're going to come up with. But you have to ask. And when she went out there, she called me immediately. She said, I cannot believe that I got this many people involved. I was like, that's actually right around the area that I thought would be interested. And she's like, really? I thought it was going to be this. And I was like, why do you think so little of yourself and your purpose? And she's like, I, she wanted to say I don't, but she was like, I do think that it's not that important. I was like, no, that's not true. Based on the amount of stuff that you've put together, based on the amount of stuff that you're dedicating your life to this thing, your events are off the chart. I see nothing but great reviews in your social media group. People are engaged in what you're doing. At what part of that do you not feel like you're enough? Yeah. You're more than enough. and the type of leader that you are, the type of visionary you are, people are going to surround you. And this is evidence that you're doing the right thing. So get them on board, get them interviewed, and make sure you know what you want your board to do. Like, oh, their board hasn't been doing anything. Have you told them what you would want them to do? Have you told them to talk to five people a week about your mission? Have you told them to share every social media post if that's an expectation you have? Have you told them?
Yeah, very much. Well, what's that say? I said before, expect little, you will get little. Expect a lot of stuff, you will get a lot. I would say that congratulations to her, but I would say she probably would have even gotten more out of that if she had even taken a step further and said, and just like any job description, the good ones, they have a little paragraph about what you can get, why you should join our company.
Yeah, absolutely.
No board postings I've ever said is what you're going to get out of this. None of them. I've never seen one yet. I hope I see one of these days, but I personally have never seen that where they actually said, this is what you can get out of this experience and why.
That's interesting.
It's important for
because I've never seen one either. And usually in the business world, you want to pitch something as the benefit or the what's in it for me. Like,
why do you want to? You want to encourage. If you got a business, you want the best candidates because it's your people that make your organization be what it is, right? So you want a best. You want an amazing pool of resumes coming in. You got to pitch it a little bit.
Yeah.
But we don't do that in the nonprofit world for your most important advisors. What's that saying? The best, you want something done, get a busy person.
Yeah, absolutely. My big thing is holding people accountable. When people first meet me, they often say that I'm generous and kind, but they don't usually say that I'm nice because holding people accountable is apparently not nice. How? Yeah. People don't, not one's ready to be held accountable, and I don't blame them. But how would you encourage an organization that's maybe struggling with their board interactions to have their board held accountable for the things that they said they were going to do?
Well, that comes down to, again, once again, the code of conduct there. But if you set it out clearly from the process, the best way in my book about, ways to vet and recruit better board members, I said, it's your best ways of creating the right culture is cutting it off at the pass to begin with. Now, if you've got a bunch of, bumping the logs already on the board, that's a whole lot of problem. You're going to have to work through that. But your best way is right from the beginning is to start setting up expectations on one hand, but yes, also to attract those right type of people. We've always got things with the stick. You got to offer a little bit of the carrot on this. You have to have the stick. You need the stick. You need the stick. You need the carrot. And the carrot of that is, this is why we think we're amazing. And this is why I think you're going to get something out of this. And why we really want, why we need really good leaders like yourself.
Mark, I love everything we've talked about today. I wanted to give you a chance before we cut it off here to talk about what you have on the horizon.
Indeed. Look, what I've learned over the years has not been easy, frankly. As I said, I can say it 5 years later, a little bit, tongue in cheek, I was fired into success. I learned a lot of the hard ways about what makes for a good board, what good makes for a good dynamic, what makes for a good relationship between an executive director and and their board, what makes for a board member's the best board members to want to be involved, to be engaged. And that's what's been the emphasis largely behind the Society of Nonprofit Board Directors, where we've created this environment like this. And what we're doing now, February 26th to 28th, is the Nonprofit Board Summit. So you can go to nonprofitboardsummit.org. This is a 2.5-day intensive conference wherein you get input where your board... Your board chair and your board members are going to get everything they need to know about what's going to be make for a personally transformative volunteer leadership experience, how they can be much more effective, how they can be much more strategic, how they can move themselves in terms of recruiting better, how they can get themselves out of the weeds, understanding how to have a better relationship with their CEO. All of which, and what makes this so pure, so wonderful, is that this is not a conference program that was made by me. I wish I could say I was a smart guy behind it. No. July, August of 2020, we put out a call to board directors, hundreds of them, and asked them, what frustrates you? What do you want to learn more about there? And the responses we got were overwhelming, over 50 responses. And the program that we have at nonprofitboardsummit.org is reflective of their comments as well. So if you're a board director and you're not content simply just with playing it easy, you want to make it, you want to make 2021 a year of impact, I challenge you, encourage you to go and check that out. Check out the nonprofitboardsummit.org and also nonprofitboarddirectors.org as well, the society behind it. If you're an executive director, this isn't specifically for you, but I'm going to put this out to you. This is a advantage to you. Take it from me. Your best boss, your board, is an informed one, okay? The best bosses are the ones that know their stuff. They know their stuff. They're a joy to work with. It's far more effective, far more easier as well, I bet, probably with, you know, spending limits, to get them, get a board member, a few of your board members in as well, wherein you can get them trained over a week. They can connect and learn from others as well as to what works. So in the end, as a result of them going this, you're going to have a better boss and a better working manager there, and you're going to enjoy coming to work. So certainly hope that, you know, as many of you come out there and register, we've got a amazing faculty of speakers that are just amazing. And check it out again at nonprofitboardsummit.org.
Thanks for that, Mark. Who's going to be your headliner this year? Who's your top speaker?
Yeah, our keynote speaker, her name is Margie Worrell. Margie Worrell, is her whole topic is about bravery. Bravery and assuming your role in terms of leadership. And I think that this is so, I'm so excited, frankly, for her talk in particular, because often enough, change really only happens in nonprofits when you've got that right person who's got enough gumption to say, that's it, I'm doing it. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. We're doing it. We're doing it. That takes a lot of guts. That takes courage. And Margie's going to tell you a little bit about how you can find that little bit of red badge courage in your board and nearby dynamics in your organization to be able to take it to the next level.
Hey, I appreciate that, Mark. Thanks so much for being on my show today. I'm looking forward to the summit.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.